Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He wants to win. You know, it's frustrating with the team we have right here and success you had at the start of the year and things not going our way right now. But do you see the frustration in a guy like that who's so important to this team? You see the intensity with that. But just an example of you saying that, like, there was no jump in on the bench. Someone like that, like I said, who's so important to the team and trying to spark the team in any way, we got to get up in that. You know, it's one of those things where you need everybody to change the game right there. And you've seen there, like, there was no energy, nothing. So you got to appreciate what he was trying to do, but the team didn't have it.
Brandon Montour.
Definitely. Yeah, I know that one from what he said.
Yeah.
No energy, nothing.
Right. No jump. I mean, I don't know. I swore on Twitter. Like, I try not to do that, but it felt really appropriate to say holy blank when like that happened. It was just so out of nowhere. I mean, you can hear in the crowd that something's happening behind the play, like there's an altercation, and so, like, you know, there's that anticipation, like, oh my, what's this gonna be? And that's sort of dissipated over the years. Like, I'm not as into that, and it's usually not as eventful anymore because of the way the game is now. It's just a different thing. And so eventually the camera cuts to it, and it's like Eichel is just unloading, and the guy's helmet is flying and never comes down, it looks like. I mean, it's incredible. And to hear Montour say, like, yeah, it didn't really, you know, the desired result, the effect was not what you wanted. Holy cow. I mean, I don't know. Are you dead inside? I mean, I know it's not my go-to option. It's not something I want to see very often, if even ever again. But wow, you know, like, my reaction was, oh my God. And here's Montour. He's on the bench going like, it wasn't a rallying cry or anything. Like, okay.
In today's episode of Sabres Life is a Flat Circle, we welcome Travis Yost from TSN. On the Wester Hotline, Travis, how have you been?
How good was True Detective season one?
That's a bulldog show.
It was one of the greatest things I've ever watched on television.
You just gave me a little like positive PTSD from that. As an aside, I'm currently sitting in the middle of a DEFCON 1 level thunderstorm. So if I disconnect, just remember it's because I hate both of you guys.
All right, good. Good to know.
PPTSD. Travis, what do you see here with the Sabres? Here we are again. I mean, expectations weren't high, but the start was pretty good, and now we're just asking all the same questions, it seems.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, too, because the opening, let's call it 3 weeks of the season, the numbers were definitively better across the board year over year, even relative to when, you know, the Buffalo win streak last year was mostly, a red herring sort of, right?
Yep.
Like, everyone knew that the play did not justify where they were in the standings, whereas, you know, the opening 2-3 weeks of this season, call it 10-12 games, Buffalo was playing pretty good. I mean, they were out shooting, out chancing their opponents pretty much across the board. The blue line looked demonstrably better, which I thought, and I still believe it's better than where it was year over year. That looked like the biggest game changer, and the fact that Carter Hutton and Linus Ullmark were actually stopping shots again relative to their second half collapse made this look like a relatively formidable team. But, you know, almost inexplicably, and this is the fascinating thing to me, because I don't remember a year in really – hockey's so wild, but I don't remember a year in recent history – where so many teams have had complete switches flip out of the blue, right? I mean, the big story today is Mike Babcock fired. Okay, you know, we knew Mike Babcock didn't have the longest leash in the world, but expectations for that Maple Leafs team were through the roof, and they just are period not playing well across the board. And, you know, in the case of Buffalo, you know, more of a broader idea or a vaguer idea of where this team would land, but we definitely expect them to be a little bit better than last year. And right now, especially in the last, call it 2-3 weeks of the season, they have regressed exactly back to where they were last year. And in some cases, it's actually a little more concerning. You know, what I wrote this week, and I would say it's the most concerning point for the Sabres team, is Rasmus Dahlin looks terrible. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely do grade him relative to our expectations. He was phenomenal last year. Yes, it is 100% true. He is a 19-year-old. He has not been dealt a great hand. The organization was deficient on talent from when he first started. But, you know, he's playing a lot of minutes with Colin Miller and Brandon Montour. These guys are top four established NHLers. And the numbers have completely fallen off a cliff, and it's on both ends of the ice. So he's not only bleeding more defensively, Buffalo is actually completely punchless with him on the ice offensively, which I find completely counterintuitive, right? Like, if you would have expected a Dahlin regression in year two, it'd be like, oh, his off puck play slips. The physicality is not there in a defensive third. Guys are taking advantage of him on a second pairing in an increased role. He's playing less minutes. He's barely getting into the offensive zone. And when they're in the offensive zone, it's a tremendous amount of one and done when he's on the ice. This is your, along with Jack Eichel, your guy. Mm-hmm. And you're not getting results with him on the ice. That is just point blank a doomsday scenario for the Sabres. Even though there are other good things with the lineup, you can't have your superstar defenseman, even if, you know, we apply all of the caveats for a 19-year-old defenseman, which are completely valid. You just can't have a stretch of games like this from a guy and expect everything to be okay. It's the same argument, by the way, I brought up Toronto a little bit ago. The biggest challenge in Toronto right now is Tyson Barrie has been awful, and they have never been able to replace Jake Gardner. And the combination of CeCe Barrie is probably worse. So it's, two hockey teams very close to each other with, maybe different expectations, but still playoff caliber expectations. And it's the one or two or three holes that are obvious in the lineup have become very obvious in recent weeks.
With Travis Yost of TSN, just to make sure we get to a few different parts of this situation here, Travis, knowing that we talked over the summer, I failed to come up with a good explanation for how so little of a Sabre team that floundered from Thanksgiving on last year was brought back. Recognizing, as I hope you would assume that I would, salary cap factors and such. Like, right. Sobotka is in this lineup as a regular. Scandella, who's done all right. Gergensen and Larson were talking about how they played with Christian Ehrhoff here. And, like, okay, they're not the worst players in the world, but there's very little happening there. Here, like, year six or whatever that is. I don't know. Can you see an argument, let alone Ristolainen? Can you see a defense for how little has changed here? Like, can you argue for it?
No. The short answer is no. I mean, there's a lot of nuance with this stuff, right? Like, yes, could you have traded Marco Scandella? Yes, and he may have been even a no-brainer. But guess what? Marco Scandella has actually been one of the bright sides for Buffalo, right? Like, he hasn't been all that bad. Vladimir Savoca, I never in a billion years would have perceived him getting into a solidified top nine role, let alone top six role. That to me, I think, is the more concerning part, because you can absolutely, I made this analogy literally yesterday, but so much of what a front office and coaching staff do are entangled with one another, right? So it's like, how do you critically evaluate one and not the other? It's almost impossible. But one area where you can draw the line of sand is the front office puts the talent on the roster, and then from that roster setup, we create an expectation of what the coach should be able to get out of it. So, yes, to Ralph Kruger, it might be unfair, just speaking plainly, it might be unfair that Vladimir Savoca is still a part of this lineup, or Marco Scandella, or any of the players that, we were disappointed with jointly last year. But that doesn't mean that Ralph Kruger needs to play Vladimir Savoca the type of minutes he's getting, or Marco Scandella, or whoever, for that matter, you want to put in that bucket. That is completely on the coaching staff, how they allocate minutes. And if you look at it, a lot of the depth guys who had killed this team last year have been put into fairly sizable roles. And that to me is the concerning point. The other piece that I think is fascinating to me, and I have not checked the numbers in the last couple of weeks to see if it's still the same, but one of my editors I got into a back and forth with a lot over a reader comment, which are always the best. And the reader comment was, hey, you've got your guys, I ordered the four lines, and it was like, oh, you got the lines mixed up, the middle stat line's the third line. And I'm like, no, the middle stat line's the fourth line. And we got into this long back and forth, and it's like, You can think whatever you want about Casey Mittelstadt and the guys he plays with. They are the 10th, 11th, and 12th ranked forwards in ice time, even strength, or all situations. They are the fourth line. And I think that's a really important distinction. Like, we can think about how talent should be deployed, but it's on Ralph Kruger and his coaching staff to actually allocate those minutes. Mm-hmm. And right now, I will give him a little bit of a pass because it is a new lineup. He is a new first-year head coach to this roster anyway. So he's still getting a handle around what works and what doesn't work, and you have to tinker when you're a first-year coach. You just have to. But in the same breath, it's like, hey, man, there's a lot of data. Like, a lot of the guys we're talking about are veteran guys who have struggled for years now in Buffalo or elsewhere and are still getting the ice time. I mean, that to me is a failure on the front office to not displace them, but it's also a failure on the coaching staff to not find ways that you can at least mitigate the damage they can do to your lineup.
Right. To me, Travis, everything in the summer, Colin Miller, the Joki Haru trade involving Alex Nylander, those two chiefly, right-handed D added to all of this. Like, we've spent a lot of the summer counting how many guys they had, specifically at right-handed D, which is, of course, what Ristolainen is. And yep. The conclusion was, well, of course. They're waiting for all the RFA dust to settle, and there's going to be a move here. Because I like Marcus Johansson in a certain way, and I like Jimmy Vesey in a certain way. If they're deployed, I feel like I'm talking like you now back to you, which is a little weird, so sorry. But if they're used properly in the right role, not, you know, today Vesey's skating with Eichel, and Johansson's been the number two center all year long when he's proven to be successful as a complimentary winger in like a bottom six role on good teams. And so the failure to make that trade is, for a second year in a row, is exactly the thing that I think is, that's my starting point for what the biggest problem with this team is. It's, you know, it solves the, if there is a sinkhole Ristolainen problem, it eradicates that. And, you know, we'll see who plays those minutes if he's not on the team. But I've got a better group of forwards all down the line because I've added somebody that bumps Johansson and VC down where they should be. And the whole thing is just a house of cards.
Yeah, and look, your comments are not only valid, they're true in other areas too, right? Like, you mentioned the Joki Haru trade. Like, he's been fantastic in a fairly limited role in Buffalo. He's been fantastic. If that trade did not work out, though, look at what's happened on the rest of the blue line. Your by far best defenseman has taken a giant step backwards. Ristolainen is who he is at this point, and you've got, I mentioned Dahlin, Colin Miller, too, has not been the type of player that he was 2-3 years ago. In fact, he's looked a lot like the player that we saw in the second half of last year with Vegas, which, you know, I thought Vegas went a little far, but, I mean, he was in healthy scratch territory. They could have easily found him a third-pairing role on that Vegas roster. There was a cap component to that trade as well when it was engineered. But either way, his game was starting to erode a little bit, and now Colin Miller's dropped into this lineup, and he's struggling on the back end. And, you know, we know that the depth issues at the forward group were obvious and pronounced. And really, you know, the Mojo trade and the DC move, you know, that added some talent to your top nine. And I think a couple of those players, especially Mojo, like those guys are flexible to some degree. You can play them on pretty much any one of those four lines and not be killed because of it. But you haven't eradicated the larger depth. I mean, you just went through all of the guys, the Larsons, the Gergensons, the Sabokas, and I'm not saying anyone individually is responsible for this, but at aggregate, we know that combination has just not worked. And there they are throughout the entire lineup yet again. And, you know, and so in one breath with the forwards, it's like, well, we didn't change enough. We didn't overhaul enough. And then on the blue line, it's like we did make moves, but absent the depth move that cost us Nylander, absent that, the blue line has actually taken a big step backwards. And I actually, you know, I wonder, it almost seems like we're being pessimistic. I will end this on a good note. But, you wonder where this team would be if the goaltending looked like it was in the second half of last year, right? I mean, it would be as catastrophic as it was from that Thanksgiving stretch to the end of the year. You know, but putting all of that aside, and I know it's frustrating to hear, but it is true, there is more talent on this roster than there was a year ago. And the biggest negative right now, the Dahlin regression, I don't think is real long-term. It might be real right now, but I don't think it's real long-term. you can't be that good and that productive as a rookie and fall that completely by the wayside and it be unilaterally because your talent, skill set, toolbox. It's just, we have never seen that happen before. And I think most people would agree, one, he's taken a step back, but two, generally optimistic about where his game is still going in the future. But, you know, it's just fascinating because at every positional group in Buffalo, you can offer a levy of criticisms, and for the most of them, they are fair. And yet at the end of the day, look at this roster, just qualitatively, from where it was one season ago to now, it is a better team. And so maybe to that end, we shouldn't be so pessimistic or negative about their placement in the standings. They are going through a rough stretch, but they are not the only team in that boat, and they at least banked enough points early on to stay remotely competitive here, and they still are. But they've got to turn it around, and I know that's a vague throwaway statement, but it is what it is. I mean, you go through another 2-3 weeks of losing, they're going to be looking up at pretty much the entire division at this point.
Travis, we might have 90 seconds. I'm thinking of two questions, so try to answer them quickly if you would, please. And then if you do, I got a bonus question. one, is the Leafs move today necessary? Was it necessary?
Yes, I don't. That organization more than anything. I don't know. I'm personally sick of the softening of expectations there. We were talking about a Stanley Cup team that's in like an 8-game losing streak or 30-game losing streak or whatever. You've got to make a change. It's the easiest move to pull. And quite honestly, Mike Babcock has not done himself any service with the way he's deployed his lines over the last year and a half. So it's hard to fire a Hall of Fame coach if that's where he's going. But he was not nearly getting enough out of that lineup.
Okay, two. Give us your prediction of the two AFC wildcard games.
I think Buffalo goes to Kansas City.
I like it. I agree. 5-4.
I think Buffalo goes to Kansas City. I think Indianapolis gets that sixth slot. Although, I got to be honest, man, I have completely reversed course on Oakland. Like, not only have they got these wins in the bank, their second half of the schedule is comically easy. I think Indianapolis is a better team, though. I think the Texans win the division, so Indianapolis in the sixth spot against possibly Houston as a divisional game.
Right. They play tomorrow night, and they played in the playoffs last year. Bonus question? Your food opinions are legendary, and there seems to be no middle ground on anything. And that's the way. That's how you use Twitter. So the thing you're talking about is either the best or the worst. The Olive Garden.
Olive Garden is as bad as the Popeye's chicken sandwich I just had yesterday is good. I understand why everyone's brawling over Popeye's chicken sandwiches. It is the best chicken sandwich I've ever had. It's not even close.
Olive Garden, you don't like it. All right.
I'm out of Olive Garden. Olive Garden, if you want the most bland pasta known to man, you can go to Olive Garden. That's the go-to spot, and I will read the answer to them all day long. Come get bland pasta.
All right. I must love bland pasta. Thank you, Travis. Always a pleasure.
Take care, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.